Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Cash Out Big, where we're sharing the tools to get your business running like a well-oiled machine. And that helps you generate the wealth, the freedom, and the legacy you've always wanted. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. Today on the show, I'm going to talk with serial entrepreneur Tarina Bell. Tarina successfully sold her service business, which was a translation company, and I thought she'd make a great case study for some of the elements you want to have in place to run your business well, and that's what also makes it sell well in the long term. And those options are really important because I was wrestling with a client this week, and one of the things that she did not really focus on was her exit. So she started a business about 4 years ago with a partner, signed a whole bunch of documents about 2 years ago when they brought in an investor, and she didn't have counsel to guide her. So here I am stepping in, you know, a couple of years later, trying to decipher these documents and explain to her why is it that her partner and a new investor can push her out of the business. Well, part of it is she didn't see her exit. She didn't understand herself what the implications were, and she kind of took documents on face value without getting the team around her to help her understand what all the implications were. And I know people like to think of lawyers as miracle workers, especially at our hourly rates. But very often our hands can be tied because of decisions business owners have made previously. That's why you just can't do this kind of stuff without an advisory team. And it's not just a team for the company, but sometimes it's also a team for you personally, because your interests may not always be aligned with the business. You know, again, if you're thinking about cashing out big, you want some kind of exit. Well, the company may not want you to go, or maybe the company wants you to go sooner than you want to go. So that's why you want to have someone, another pair of eyes, those trained eyes, looking at these kinds of documents and helping to advise you so that the business really is moving in a direction and you're moving with it in a way that supports both of you. Otherwise, you can find yourself in a situation like my client, unfortunately, is in now, where she signed a lot of her rights away beforehand. So what she thought was going to be, hello, this great big payday, it turns out is going to be very little, if anything, for her. So if you want the option to cash out big when you are ready to move on, then make sure you listen to our webinar, cashoutbigwebinar.com, so you can discover the five steps to that kind of solid business that, yes, buyers want, but also gives you the freedom to exit. So make sure you register at cashoutbigwebinar.com. And now for our guest. I had the pleasure of meeting Tarina when I was doing research for an Enterprising Women magazine article. And one of the things I found really fascinating about her path is she had a number of different interests, some of which came out through the first business that she sold, the translation company, and some of which are now being expressed through her second business. And it's fascinating to talk to a business owner who went into it saying, yeah, I don't think this is going to be my forever gig, but I still want to build it up. I still want it to earn good revenue, and I still want it to provide a legacy for me. So I'm delighted to have Tarina here on Cash Out Big. Tarina, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know, I'm really curious about what you've been able to accomplish, because what you've done, not so many service business owners are able to do. So would you tell us a little bit about your company, in every language, what made you start it, and you know, how you got started and how that started to build?
Right. Well, it's interesting that you say that a lot of startup founders aren't necessarily able to do this. statistically, it is very, very, very hard. It's not just that you have to have the gumption to go out there and start something, but you have to get it running, and then it has to become something that people want to acquire. And then just the actual going through the sale part, to me, can be even more difficult than starting the company sometimes. But it is something that I think that every female entrepreneur, that every entrepreneur, period, is capable of doing, or you wouldn't have been able to have gotten to the place to where you could sell. It's just getting the knowledge to be able to then do that, which is one reason why I really appreciate your having me on. It's another reason your podcast is great. So I apologize, because I think after that you would ask me some more specific questions. So let's get to it, and let's educate folks and get them equipped to do it themselves.
Hey, and I appreciate the plug, so it's all good. So give us a little bit of information on how you started the company. What was it about? Yeah. What was the industry? How you got started?
Certainly. It was kind of by accident. I never really set out and, you know, thought, hey, this is what I'm going to be. Now, I think that everyone who is a true entrepreneur, you know, they have the lemonade story or something like that. You know, my friend Ed, he actually started a business in the eighth grade where he got his friends to resell candy for him. You know, so I think that it's something that everybody knows is in them. But yeah, but when you actually go out and start, and when you actually try to begin with a company, a lot of people can get quieted down in the whole, well, I need a business plan and I need to talk to folks and, you know, let me go to school and get advice and let me talk to other people who have a business and things like that. But at the end of the day, what you have to do is just do it. You know, if you think right now about everybody you know who has a business idea, and then separately in your head, think about everybody you know who has a business. And the reason that the number of folks you know with a business idea is so much higher than the number of folks you know with a business is because at the end of the day, you have to do it. And that's exactly how I started In Every Language. And it's really close to how I started TV Runway, my current company. You know, within Every Language, I quite literally woke up and I was off that day from my job. And I thought, you know, I'm going to start a business today. I didn't go forth and spend months and months and months in planning. I did it. So you really just have to decide one day when you wake up, today I'm going to do it.
And what was it that In Every Language actually did? How did you come to that business idea?
It was a translation company, and we wound up pivoting a couple of times, but we started out, I was a freelance French interpreter. My main client was Kentucky Refugee Ministries. Kentucky at the time, you know, a lot of folks don't know, actually had the second highest refugee resettlement population in the United States.
Exactly.
It's a big surprise to folks, but I worked with a lot of people from the Congo, from Cameroon, Togo, basically countries, you know, Cote d'Ivoire, where they came to the United States and they needed a French interpreter to interpret in what you and me, Nina, would just think were basic life settings. You know, like when you go to the doctor for the first time, when you enroll your child in school, classes where you learn how to balance a checkbook, you know, things like that, where you're just learning, classes where you learn if you show up late for your job in America, they'll probably fire you. You know, classes where they say, hey, in this country, you know, you're not going to get a job if you don't wear deodorant. So interpreting for what are the most basic of life skills, and classes and all of the different functions and communications and conversation in our society that go around putting those life skills and basic life needs into place. So I was doing that already. I started doing it basically just a humanitarian angle. I worked as a television producer, which is part of why my current company works in television media, because that's my original background. But because I was fluent in French, I was a television producer at the Concorde crash, I basically learned, hey, you know, I could also be an interpreter. This is something I could do, because I was interpreting news sources and translating news sources for NBC News Channel surrounding the Concorde crash. So I learned I had that, and I started putting it to use for other people. So what happened was, after 9/11, I realized I needed a break from news. You know, it was just something that, you know, that I love, but, you know, not necessarily what I wanted to continue doing at that time. So I started doing the interpreting more and more. So I realize I'm giving you a little bit of a longer answer, but I think anyone who's able to drive a business to the long and tedious point of being able to sell it has to have passion, and they have to have a story behind what they do. You can't just look at a market and think, hey, there's money there, let's do it. Right. Because as soon as your third problem comes along, you're going to bail. So right. There's got to be some personal reason for why you love what you do. And I loved language because I was able to actually put it to use and help people. And what happened was I started having to turn organizations down because maybe I couldn't go to the hospital with this guy from Cameroon because I was already over at the school system or over at, you know, the government assistant office with the guy from Togo. And the first time I had to turn that down, I thought, you know, that's not what we're accomplishing here. That's not helping everybody. And then also, you know, like, that's money. And I wasn't doing this 40 hours a week. And so when you're not working nonstop, you hate to turn down work. But the fact of the matter is, with the kind of work I was doing, it was at the same time. And I thought, well, you know, if that happens again, I'm going to recommend my friend Corinne. And I'm just going to ask that she give me part of her rate. And I went to bed. And then the next morning when I woke up, I thought, well, why just French? You know, people are always asking, well, Tarina, you know, can you come do Swahili? You know, can you, do you know somebody who can do Swahili? You know, or Spanish and all these other things. And I saw the groups of people I was working with, and I saw that they had been professional interpreters in UNHCR camps. And they came over here, and they couldn't find jobs, even the ones who did speak fluent English because they'd been interpreters already, that they couldn't find work. You know, like, there was a man who was the number two in the Congolese government before the coup, and he came over here and got a janitor's job.
Wow.
And I thought, all of these other people who are perfectly capable, they could do it. And so I literally woke up that morning thinking, what about all these other languages, and started a business. I just literally woke up and did it. And then from there, the business itself dictated by and large our path to where we started doing basically this humanitarian work, which we won't get into what it says about our society, that it pays the worst out of all of the language work out there. You know, the part that actually makes change in people's lives. But again, that's a pigeonhole.
That's right. And that requires a bottle of wine and
throwing and all of your business. Yeah, exactly. So then we started doing corporate document translation, and then we started doing website translation after that, and getting more and more into the tech world, which led me where I am today. And then that was the point where we sold.
Wow. So how did, you know, for many service business owners, they've got the passion, they're in it, they're seeing different things that they can do with the business, as you mentioned, to go from the humanitarian work into corporate document translation. But they don't often get the, I want to build this to be sellable. That seed doesn't always get planted. Mm-hmm. How did that get implanted in your head?
It was how I started out. It was my goal, essentially, from day one. You know, I'm in my upper 30s. I'm a later Gen Xer. And what Gen X saw was the baby boomers work their ASS off to just be fired or laid off 1 to 3 years before retirement. To find people later in Gen X or millennials who go into any job thinking it's the rest of their life job. And that mentality was what allowed me, because the problem that we get is that businesses are easy to sell because they're not dependent on you and they're their own entity, or they're hard to sell because you created a boutique business or a lifestyle business, and they call them lifestyle businesses because it's shaped around your lifestyle. And so whenever you subtract your lifestyle from that and you think, oh, whoops, you know, I'm 75 years old. It would be nice to sell this thing and finally retire. You know, or it might be nice to leave it to my child or somebody else. You have something that you've spent decades shaping around your lifestyle, because the reason you had that business was because you wanted that lifestyle. And then when you pull out the skeletal system, when you pull out the spine of it, which is your lifestyle, you know, all of a sudden the whole body falls. And what do I have to sell? So the sooner you realize that, the better you can shift it. So even if you're running a lifestyle business and, you know, say you're in your mid-40s, so you don't aim to retire for a long time, well, you know, are you going to close it when you do, or are you going to want to have something that is of value to somebody else? And something that is customized 100% for you is of little value to somebody else.
Right. And I use the analogy often of moss on a tree, that, you know, everything just sort of gets engrafted to you and how you want to work and where you're spreading your branches.
Right.
But, you know, the moss is not going to hang around if the tree's not there.
Right. And it's not something where you can pick it up and put it on to protect another tree.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and that's what you're doing when you're selling a lifestyle business, is it's been financing your lifestyle, and you're pretty much asking for them to rip it off of you like moss off a tree and then stick it on somebody else's lifestyle. And it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. So great. And that's, I guess that's part of what I was getting to is the, I want this to be sellable, a nature or a nurture thing. Do you start with it, or did you have an aha moment that brought you to it? So it sounded like that really started at the very beginning with you as you're saying, you know, what do I want as an exit strategy?
Right. And I won't say, you know, I want to be honest here. I mean, I won't say that day one I went in thinking, how do I grow a business to sell? You know, I went
right.
in thinking, you know, hey, I don't have anything better to do today. How do I grow a business? You know, or how do I start a business? You know, but the sooner you realize that, the sooner you can start to craft your business around something that isn't you. And it's never too late, you know, but it's just like, you know, it's like when a child grows. If you can catch scoliosis early and get them a brace, they're going to grow up really tall and, I don't know, for all you know, become a professional soccer player or something. But if you don't catch it, or if you ignore it, you know, you're going to wind up with an adult who has a highly curved spine. So as soon as you realize I may want to sell one day, you know, it's never too late, but you should at that time start putting in systems.
Great. So what were some of the first systems you started to put into the business to start to run without you?
We documented everything. Don't leave anything in your head. We documented everything, every client interaction, every email received. Now, you know, by everything, I don't literally mean everything. Like if you wrote them and said, hey, can I meet at 3? And they wrote back and said, house 3:30, you know, we weren't going to save that second bit in the system. But we put dates on everything. One mistake we made, and it was kind of hilarious, we started noticing in year 3 that some of my employees and team members hadn't put years on dates. So it was like, okay, was this in year 1 or was this in year 2? So you have to put years on things because you have to think we're going to be around for more than 1 year. You know, so that was an early mistake. But we kept a project management system. We kept everything computerized. We didn't do stuff on wipe-off boards like some of our competitors. You know, we didn't keep things in our head. You know, we kept one centralized project management system. That way, and I don't mean this bad, but that way if anybody, and it's not even necessarily that you need the bill itself, but what happens if you die? I was talking to a friend of mine this weekend. He had a buddy who died last week, and they had to shut down the company, you know, that week because they had no idea how to transfer any of Dad's stuff. He was a doctor. You know, and it's like, well, we don't know, and it doesn't do the patients a service. We can't keep it running because nobody knows what's going on because it was all in Dad's head. You know, and then we have to refer them on to somebody else because they can't not see a doctor. Well, we spend a month and a half trying to figure out if he had handwritten notes or something somewhere. Mm. You never know what's going to happen. You know, so the fact of the matter is, for whatever the reason, if you want your business to continue without you, your business cannot be built around and centered and wholly in you. Write stuff down. Just write it down.
Yeah. You know, and the same thing also comes for key employees, of which you are one, that, you know, if somebody had to step away because they're, you know, I was talking to a colleague who is going to be out of the office for a week because her best friend's husband died. Or, you know, there could be an illness. You know, another colleague had to step away from a networking group because her sister's undergoing cancer treatments and she's there to support her through that. And these are the important life events that where we want to be there for family and friends. But if we need to step away or a key employee needs to step away, you want someone else to be able to step in. And they can't step
in
if they're stepping into your head.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I learned from In Every Language that we've managed to correct with TV Runway, is that within every language, it took maybe a year and a half before I was even able to take an afternoon off, like to go to a doctor's appointment or something, because, you know, at first it's only you. You don't have employees yet and that kind of thing. But with TV Runway, you know, like I before listeners, before we hopped on the call here, I had mentioned that I'm actually in Kentucky for a funeral this week. It was very unexpected. My company, TV Runway, right now is a year old. But I was able to fly to Kentucky at the last minute, and I've got business partner who's taking over. You know, I've got other systems in place that are taking over while I'm out. So looking at the fact that, you know, something has happened to where I'm no longer able to be involved this week, and I'm able to do this versus where I was able to do that with TV, I mean, where I was able to do that within every language. And, you know, it was year three before I was able to take a full week vacation. So the thing about it is it's not just... And again, you know, I want to make sure for our listeners that we're staying on topic as far as gearing your business up for sale, but it's not just gearing your business up for sale. You know, you may think, well, I want to sell eventually, but I really like, you know, the extra revenue that I personally get from not having to pay for the system. The thing about it is you're not doing it for your business. You're doing it for you because you don't know when you may have to step out for any reason. And once you start putting it in place for you, you begin to learn that it's worth the extra effort. Because really, if you come back to it, the reason why you're selling your business is for you. It's so you can retire. It's so you can leave a legacy to your children or to whoever your beneficiary is. You know, it's so you can have time to do other things whenever you're done with this. So you can move to other challenges or other areas where you might be able to learn. You know, my first business is translation. The current one is a visual search engine API. That is a brand new challenge for me. If I had not sold in every language, I would have learned lots more about translation, but how much would I have learned about an entirely brand new area of visual search? It's you're doing it not just to sell, but you're doing it for you.
Right. And, you know, to your point earlier about starting because there's a passion, if the business in a way closes when you decide to walk away, then the good work that it has the opportunity to do, the change that it can make in the community that you're focused on, that also, if you will, dies when you walk away from it. Whereas if you create something that you can sell, then that good work has an opportunity to continue.
Exactly. You know, it's a... You know, like the clients that I cared about the most, you know, whenever I sold my company, one of the things that we did with the acquirer was sat down and had a conference call with those folks. And they were all invited to attend. And we went over, you know, hey, here's the way you're still going to be taken care of. And even though I was selling that company, you know, I didn't want to just sell it and walk away. So there were a lot of clients that once the sale became to where we could share the fact that it had gone through, like once the sale had actually closed, but before we sent out public, you know, I and the acquirers agreed, hey, I need to just call these folks individually because it's not just you being able to retire, but it's the fact that if you're a conscientious business owner, if you're an ethical business owner, if you're the kind of business owner at all that, you know, that gets to know your clients. Like I learned what, you know, there was this one, like our largest client, I knew what her mother did for a living. You know, I knew what medical problems she was having. You know, I knew what she wanted to be when she was little. You know, I got to know her. So it wasn't just about, hey, how do I prepare my sales so that I can make money and walk away? It was also, how do I prepare this company for sales so that when I retire, Debbie's business is still taken care of. And Debbie still gets a good job done for Debbie. So it's exactly what you just said. It's not just getting it to where you can sell it so somebody else can take care of those people, unless you don't care. You may not care.
You know, but some people don't.
You know, I did. I cared very much about how those people were taken care of after I was done.
Right. So you also created something very interesting. You know, it wasn't just translation, but you had a very special way of evaluating which translators might be best for a particular project or how to evaluate them, which gave a particular competitive advantage. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, we actually had a point system, and I don't want to bore folks too much with how the inner exciting world of translation works. You know, I'm sure it would be a very thrilling story for, you know, the folks who care. But usually what most translation companies do is they just work with somebody because they like working with them. you know, it's more of a gut decision. It is more of a, it's a highly non-mathematical, non-logical process. I mean, there's inner logic, but, you know, it's more like, we know Magdalena has always returned on time, so let me work with Magdalena. Or, you know, I just saw Maria at this conference, and she mentioned that she's great at legal work, so let me call Maria. It's very arbitrary, and it is a highly subjective, not objective process. But what that means is when a project manager, you know, quits or, you know, or whatever, you know, Maria may never see work again. And so the client isn't going to see consistency because maybe John handled that client and now Mary does, and John worked with Maria, but Mary likes to work with Sue. So one of the things that we did, and this is also the overlap, a lot of what you do to prepare to run your business is what you should already be doing to just run a better business.
Right.
You know, like if it's taking a lot of extra effort to prepare your business for sale, then there are flaws and you don't have enough systems to run an effective business to begin with. You know, so one of the things that we did, and this had nothing to do with selling the company. Now, to me, it certainly increased the value of the company, because nobody else in the world had this system. And when they bought my company, the acquirers also bought this system. But what we did was we started assigning point values to things. Okay, for every on-time delivery, you get a point. You know, for every delivery that's late, we're going to subtract a point. You know, and we went through and it's like, what creates value for the customer? You know, what is of value internally for us that the customer may not be aware of, but without it, you know, it winds up not working for the client. You know, if we found a lot of errors in the translation, well, you're going to lose points. You know, if you had a master's degree in translation, you gained points. If you had your national certificate as a translator from the American Translators Association, well, you gained points. You know, if you had been certified by a court, you gained points. So we basically, instead of looking at the resume and going, okay, you know, degree in French, check. You know, like if you had lived in the other country for the second language for so long, you got points. If you were a legal translator and you also happen to have a law degree, you got points. So you see how that goes.
Sure.
So whenever we did that, what we found was that in your head, you may think that Maria is going to do the better job, but really and truly, you know, Roberto's the guy you needed on this project. And so whenever we implemented that, we not only saw the increase in quality ourselves, because it was no longer about variable impressions. It was then about basically a logical and mathematical truth, you know, which perception and reality aren't always the same. So we were able to fine-line that out. But it gave us something that, and again, it goes back to what you're doing to prepare for sale should be the same things you're doing to prepare to run a better business, but it basically gave us a point of differentiation with our competitors. To where, one, we've got a system to where 100% of our staff could go away. And when a project comes, it's no longer about who do we call for this client, but it's let's go in the project management system, let's look at the record and see who's done it, and then let's look at the point system, see if they're still the right person. You know, so we were able to completely replace our internal knowledge with systems, should like our entire company just be blighted from the map. And then also that differentiation point not only helped us with sales, but it was something that the acquirers were getting that they literally could not get from another translation company.
Right. And I really appreciate that point about what you do to build a better business is also what gives you an advantage when it comes time for sale, because I think that's where a lot of business owners get stuck there. They're not necessarily building the better business. So I'm really curious, how did that idea of a point system come into your head? Because usually creative entrepreneurs aren't always going for the logical and mathematical truth, as you said.
Well, see, and that's the answer is, to be honest, I don't even know. I tend to think that way anyway. You know, like when I was about 5 years old, I was writing out schedules. You know, to where, you know, like I did reading from noon to one and lunch was one, you know, or whatever. So I think, you know, like when I was a kid, folks used to call me Spock and say that Simon was the chipmunk I was most like. You know, so I think that way anyway. Yeah, but I mean, seriously, like, you're either a systems person or you're not. Like, let's face it. Like, I just geeked out about my system for probably five more minutes than most listeners wanted to hear because I am a systems person.
Right.
You know, so I definitely can see how it might be difficult to come up with systems if you're not a creative person. But it took creativity. It takes knowing you need systems to start the system. But it took creativity to figure out, okay, so what do we need to get points for? And then let's go through and, you know, let's kind of fake score jobs that are already done and over so that we can see, did we use the right person? And, you know, actually it keeps saying that Roberto does a better job than Eduardo, but we wouldn't use Roberto if you paid us. So something's wrong with the system. You know, so it takes creativity to figure out what actually goes into it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then also the testing and the tweaking, because you may have a system. And as you say, you know, everybody hates Roberto. Sorry, Roberto. And people want to work with Maria. But for some reason, you know, that gut check keeps bringing you back to Roberto. So something's not consistent and something is not making sense.
Yeah, exactly. And then you keep the logic because maybe the reason they don't want to work with Maria is just because they really, really, really don't like her because they thought, I don't know, she was rude at a conference when they met her. You know, so then that improves HR because you put the system in, because you're seeing where the biases are or where an employee may have personal goals, you know, that are different from the company goals.
Mm-hmm. Right. Terrific.
You know,
terrific.
Yeah.
And so just to round out, you've gone from almost a hands-on service business to an API, which is very tech-oriented. Was it just a personal challenge that made you want to make that shift?
Well, again, you know, I had worked in television before, and what we do, what the new company TV Runway does, is if you're watching television program or video online, and you want to know where women's clothes in the video are available, you just hit pause and click on the video, and then we show you where you can buy that item right there inside of the video online so that you don't have to leave to realize that the shirt is available at Nordstrom, you know, or wherever. So it links back to my background in TV. And then again, you know, to have grown up in rural Kentucky, my mother was absolutely amazing to have found computer science classes for me to have started taking like at 7. So
wow.
I knew how to code already. Yeah, exactly. Like in rural Kentucky, like how on earth? But, you know, that's everybody out there with a Wonder Woman for a mom is nodding their head saying that mothers do what it takes. You know, but to say that because I was already a TV person and I was already a computer person. So I'm coming back to that. But that being said, everything is a service. You know, right now, yes, we may have 5 lines of code that we give one of our partners like StreamNow TV or Big Star TV or that we would give to someone like Hulu or ABC.com or something like that. And so you're thinking we are giving code. Well, no, you're not getting the service because even though Hulu or StreamNow TV would take that code and put it on their site, what we're giving you is the service that, like right now, I'm waiting to go to a funeral. I've got a 16-month-old niece in there that's going to come in here running and wanting stuff. I'm talking to you on the podcast. I am fully paying attention to the podcast. Looking at my computer, I've gotten 5 emails, you know, since we started talking. Everyone's life is like that. So we're giving you the service of you don't have to go to the mall anymore. You spill something on your white shirt. You got the TV on. You reach up. You push the white shirt that's on that character, and we drop ship it to you from Amazon. So we're giving people the service of their life back and of giving them their time back, whereas within every language, we were giving them the service of understanding how to enroll their child in school or getting more sales from their French client so that they can create more jobs here in the U.S. at their manufacturing plant. So if you think of everything as a service, and then how do you design systems to better deliver that service, it's all the same.
Terrific. Tarina, any last words of wisdom, anything that you haven't shared yet that you really feel that service business owners could benefit from knowing in terms of running a more effective business that ultimately is sellable?
Tweet at Tarina Bell, TERENABELL, if anybody listening has any specific questions. I'm happy to get back and that sort of thing. And then, you know, there's not anything necessarily right now. It's systems are general. So the advice holds for everyone. But in the end, your business is unique. And at some point, you have to also let folks know, you know, that you're out there and that you're ready to sell, especially if you've been running a lifestyle business. So I haven't gone through that, but I know that for friends who ran their company like a lifestyle business, that was what was hardest, was how do you let your competitors know that you're ready to get out without letting your competitors know that they could then call your clients and say, hey, I'm ready to get out. So right. I would just argue that when you get closer to the sale point, like when you're building up to sale, systems are the rule. But whenever you actually put yourself out to market, discretion is the rule.
Systems and discretion. So terrific. Yeah, as you said, Tarina, a lot of great, great information about just focusing on how do you build a more effective and efficient business. And that's actually what gives it a lot of the value when it comes to having a business you can sell.
Right.
So thank you so much for being with us today. It's really been a pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in to Cash Out Big. Would you like the option to cash out big when you're ready to move on? Then sign up for access to one of our special video trainings, the Cash Out Big webinar. Inside, we'll share our action-packed scale formula to help you create a company that buyers salivate over. Sign up at cashoutbigwebinar.com. Again, that's cashoutbigwebinar.com. Sign up there now, and we'll see you on the next episode.